The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast and the video, of course. We're on video if you want to check that out on the YouTube channel. I'm joined by Paul Hill, full-time investor, equity analyst. You're not wearing your Easter shirt, Paul. I've noticed that.
I should be. I'm absolutely just worn out and beaten up over the last 2 weeks. I did warn you a fortnight ago that we were going to have a busy 14 days, and we haven't been disappointed. We've just had sets of results, and now we've had, obviously, inflation out of the US yesterday and the UK today. So, plenty to discuss.
Well, let's start with that, because that's the whole driving factor of the market at the moment. I think inflation, isn't it? And of course, you've got Ukraine, but that plays into that as well. So we had the figures out from the US and from the UK today. Now I'm seeing, of course, the figures are high. I don't know what it was in the US,
8.5%. 8.5%. Just let's repeat that. 8.5%, which is over four times the 2% target that the Federal Reserve have put down as their as how they actually, you know, whether it's neutral or not. So huge gap there to reduce.
Yeah, massive. And but I saw some people talking heads on CNBC yesterday saying was this CPI came a bit lower or something, and they're saying it's either peaked or it's about to peak. Of course, and I think, really? And in fact, I was listening to another guy on there talking about it's just simple arithmetic. For example, and he gave the example of the oil price. You know, he said it peaked at $140 a barrel. It's now about $100 a barrel, and it's pretty much doubled over the last 12 months. It can't do that again. If it doesn't do that again, inflation's not going to go up as much as it is. So even though inflation will
don't
peak,
don't tempt fate.
I know.
Don't tempt fate.
So he said. So even though if it does double again, of course inflation's going to keep surging. Now if we see that surge stop and it slow down, that will help. And they were saying, I think it has sort of peaked to a certain extent. I don't know if they know this, but if you go back in time and look at previous massive peaks in inflation, it doesn't just go up and come back down. You know, it doesn't happen like that, does it? It goes up, comes back down, then goes up again, comes back down, but not as high as the previous peaks. But, I mean, it's a worry here, and the central banks have to get ahead of it and then start reacting, not just talking big about it, like the Fed, but they have to start doing things. And that's it. Also, you have built into that the cost of living has gone up massively, and that will affect people already. I mean, just looking at our households, you do think, okay, what can we cut back on? You've got to be careful here now, And even that behavioural change in people will help, won't it,
Yeah, I mean, just coming back to your first point, has inflation peaked? And I think, as you say, just by the maths, it probably has. And there's a new concept now knocking around sort of the economists and the big pundits out of Wall Street and the city, being the pig and the python concept, which is this python has just swallowed a huge amount of inflation and it's got to digest it. Now, it won't just go all the way down to the bottom and just be one big ball, which will then go back to 2%. It'll actually take quite a lot of time. And I know Deutsche Bank came out with a quite good bit of analysis yesterday following the US CPI. And they show that the headline CPI, as you suggest, will decline, but it's actually going to stay pretty elevated for quite some time and only really get back to sort of your 2 to 3% level, really towards the back end of 2024. And I'll repeat that, in 3 years' time. Yeah. So, because, and the rationale behind there is because it has actually changed consumers' sort of behavior to a certain extent, because you've had a long period of higher inflation, and that's built into rental increases, so that the price of shelter and housing, and likewise into wages, because wages are about 5 or 6% or 4 to 5% both here and in the US, and likewise shelters up sort of like 7% as well, and those tend to be sticky, so it'll take time for that to come down. But as we always say, what's the best cure for high prices? It's high prices, because it basically stifles demand. But what will happen unfortunately, well, we're already seeing, isn't it, is the people who can afford to actually have got disposable income have been, you know, basically have had seen salary increases as well over the last 2 or 3 years. Then they're going to go on holiday. I mean, you're ready. I can see that with your shirt. And you're already sort of like packing your bag. But unfortunately, as we've talked about before, in the UK, there's at least 5 million people on universal credit who are going to be really, really struggling because they don't earn, you know, a salary. That's, and their universal credit is being cut, never mind going up. And now they've got to face with the energy crisis and or the inflation crisis. And the reason why the UK came in at 7% this morning versus the US at 8.5%, there's two reasons. One is because the energy price cap hasn't yet rolled off properly in April in the UK, and expect that the CPI in April to go well above 8%. And it probably will go above 8% because the slight dampener of the US inflation has actually been the stronger dollar, and the UK is weakened against it. So I would not be surprised if the next 2 months we see almost a 10% print in the UK on CPI just because of that currency effect.
Yeah, yeah. But then we have to translate that, you know, as investors into the markets, how the market's taking this. Because, of course, as long as you see that peak or slow down in the growth and the rise of inflation, that's surely bullish for the markets, isn't it?
Well, what you've got on the other side of the coin, as you point on the other side, is such that you've got the Federal Reserve now being quite hawkish. And what they're building into the markets is that actually US interest rates are going to peak at about 3% compared to, you know, about, what, 0.5% at the moment. So there's going to be a huge increase in a short period over about a year to get to sort of like, you know, your 2.75, 3% sort of like peak for interest rates. But equally, you've got the Federal Reserve reducing its balance sheet and do quantitative tightening. And a rough rule of thumb, this is the other sort of broad concept along with the pig and the pie, is that for every $1 trillion of QT they do, quantitative tightening, that effectively tightens the economy by about 0.5% of GDP. So if you think about it, yeah, if you're pushing interest rates up to sort of 3% by this time next year in the US, plus you've run your balance sheet off by its current balance sheet size is 9 trillion and to get pre-pandemic levels was 4 trillion. So let's just assume eventually over the next 3 years, they do 5 trillion, get back to pre-pandemic levels. That's 2.5% of extra tightening. So we're looking at a rough pig and a python concept of 5.5% interest rates would be a, you know, shadow. So when it comes back, is it positive for the market? The answer to that is you've just pushed up the attractiveness of fixed income, of zero risk treasuries in the States. And that is then used as your anchor against equity valuation. So yes, equities should do well in a high inflation environment as long as they've got pricing power. But when it comes to valuations, you're going to see, or ratings, you're going to see a compression of the multiple. It currently is at about 18, 19 times. It came down from 21 times. If you look at on the maths at 5%, if you did have actually a theoretical net 5% on the US Treasury, then that would be probably around, you know, you'd expect sort of like, what would that be, about 16 times, 15 times maybe as a PE. And that would get back to historical averages. So Yeah. You've got those, you've got that push and the pull. So it's a stock picker's market. And it comes down to what you and I have been banging the table on. Look for companies with strong pricing power who can absorb the inflation and and pass that on. I've got strong IP and secular growth. And if you can get a combination of that at a reasonable price, then you're doing really well.
Yeah. And so when you say strong pricing power, it's hard to know sometimes, but I suppose one of the keys of this is looking at margins, isn't it? When you look at the margins of a company, if they've got decent sized margins, and they can take on that, you know, the squeeze either way, can't they? You know, I mean, companies with small margins and really tight margins, they're going to have a big problem here. You know,
yeah. Well, these margins is obviously one, but the other side of the coin is how tight it is in their end markets, and whether their end markets are driven by secular trends or whether it's actually, you know, cyclical trends. And if you've basically got normal margins, but it's tight in your end market, you know, effectively demand is strong, and essentially, you basically have got secular tailwinds, then you should be fine as well. So it's IPR, it's good margins, it's something unique, differentiation that's going to be able to do it. And I mean, one company that's already managed to sort of like, you know, push that on would be Northbridge, and they came out with their prelims yesterday. And I spoke to Executive Chairman Peter Harris and CFO Ewan Phillips, and they've been able to absorb the cost, recruit more people into their new factory expansion, and pass those extra costs on through to customers to balance the actual margins. And they're seeing, I mean, they've seen just over the last 12 months, because of largely a mix effect, they've seen their return on capital employed improve from about 9% to 18%. I mean, doubled. I mean, that's just like enormous. And likewise, gross margins have ticked up a couple of percent as well, as that mix has moved into renting more hiring out load banks rather than actually just selling them through. And they're seeing some real, I mean, the strong secular growth winds behind that are effectively data centers, network stability, renewables. I mean, you should really go and speak to these guys, because I think you have actually, haven't you? You've had them, yeah, had Peter back, yeah, on a podcast, yeah. I mean, I know I've talked to them quite a bit, and I mean, I own, you know, a reasonable shares. It's one of my top three holdings at the moment. And it's a classic case of run your winners here, because these tailwinds are going to be 10 years. And, you know, their EBITDA drop through rates on their rental fleet are, you know, sort of like 60, 70, 80%. And likewise, when it comes, well, with their sales, it's a lot less, because obviously they're selling them to end users. But essentially, they need to build their fleet of load banks and expand both, particularly out in the States, in Texas, California as well, and also into Europe and Asia. And they're getting strong demand across the patch everywhere in the world. And they enter this year with another fourth consecutive year of record order books. I mean, that just says everything, that they've got the product. They've got the right product with the right service at the right time. And they're doing great. They really are, yeah, doing gangbusters.
I did read through it, you know, on like the continuing operations up 20%. Then they're cheap, aren't they? They're not even expensive, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the other thing,
less than two times sales there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but I know. And the other thing, actually, which is just brilliant about it, is actually the. And this is my opinion, okay? So take it with a pinch of salt, right? Is actually the analyst community hasn't yet sussed out there's some hidden value in this business, and this will come. This will be upside once the light bulb moment hits them. That'll be great. One, the first sort of like a hidden value is actually that rental fleet net book value is roughly around about £6 to 7 million, yeah. Whereas actually the market value is about 40 million. If you divide that by 30, the difference by 30 million shares, you get over £1 of extra hidden value of net assets on there. And the other side of the coin to that is that the reason why the market value is so much higher than the net book value is they've got a really quite a bit, you know, it's a very conservative depreciation policy for the load bank. So it's straight line over 10 years. And essentially, their replacement capex for this load banks is negligible, really. They have to do two big services over 20 years. But these things essentially sell for what they make it in 10, 15 years' time. So on that basis, when it comes to sort of the other analysts, when they do their valuation, you know, they basically bake it in against standard multiples across the sector, which have, you know, depreciation and repayment of capex in line, whereas Crestik isn't. It's basically has 2 million or 2.5 million of depreciation for that higher fleet that really it doesn't, it's just a financial charge. It's like goodwill amortization. It should be stripped out totally. And if you do that, I mean, I get a valuation of roughly around between £2.45 and £2.70. And other analysts are on about £2. And that's the difference. It's because I then justify a higher multiple. I know you sound a bit bored on it, mate, but I can tell you, this is like a really good story. And I think there's value at current levels. I would, if I didn't have so many shares, I'd be buying a lot, I'll tell you, right at these levels, even though it's gone up well.
No, I don't sound bored. I listen every on my webinar every week with the club. I go through results of companies under 100 million market cap, and this is one of them looking at. And this fits the metrics. You know, I mean, I look for, you know, companies with good growth, good valuation, you know, cash profitable, and that's right in there.
Well, how much upside do you want? Double. Let's say you're not being too rich, you're too greedy, and you're looking not for a 10 bagger this time. You're looking for a 2x over 3 years of good solid secular growers.
I'd love that now. It's like in the last 12 months, I'd love 20%.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You look at the people on this share register. You've got Christopher Mills. I mean, he's been buying it. He knows this is undervalued, and he's been buying at these current levels a lot of stock. Yeah. So, I mean, that just says everything. If you want a steady business that's going to generate shed loads of cash over the next 3 years and continue growing, and probably actually will be taken out by a bigger player in that sort of period, perhaps at a multiple. But even if it isn't at M&A, I genuinely think this will be above £3 in about 3 years' time. And probably a lot higher. I mean, probably a lot higher. I mean, you know, what's wrong with that? I mean, you know.
What is the sale going through then? The sale on the tool hire business? That's happening, isn't it?
It's just about done and dusted. There's a little bits and pieces left, but it's just done and dusted. I mean, I would strongly say to people, you know, this is, for me, a run the winners. But frankly, if you're not in and you want something which is a low risk, secular growing, high margin and high return on capital employed stock, then look no further than Northbridge. No. I mean, another one with sort of like really good growth drivers. And I get more impressed as I learn more about it, was Avintraz. Now, he came out with a rather innocuous statement. He won two large nuclear contracts on Monday, which were in line with estimates. It's worth together about $7 million. But then I've sort of like done a bit more digging and sort of like asked the company. And because this is not so published anywhere, but, you know, and they estimate that effectively the nuclear sector contributes of sales, depending on sort of order flow and what they get and stuff like that. But of the order of 40% of turnover, this is turning into a massive secular growth drive. Because if you dovetail that, with what Boris Johnson said 2 weeks ago, that nuclear was going to be a huge investment area, it was going to increase to 25% of the UK's generation. And this has been reciprocated in America and elsewhere in the world, et cetera, because of obviously they don't want to rely on Russia and Putin. Then this is going to be an absolute winner. And it plays in multiple areas in this whole sort of like, you know, full life cycle of nuclear. I mean, obviously, we've talked about these fantastic storage boxes the size of minis where you put low-level nuclear waste or medium-level of nuclear waste for 500 years, and it's got effectively a brilliant niche position in that. So that's basically the decommissioning. It plays also in the extending, this is really where a lot of the money's been, but extending the useful life of nuclear facilities, so for spare parts, for aftermarket services, repairs and all that kind of stuff, pumps and all this sort of stuff. So it does a lot of that. But also it's at the leading edge of small nuclear sort of like, you know, reactors that are now going to be put in place. You know, things like the, you've probably heard about it, but the Rolls-Royce stuff that they're thinking about doing. But there's similar technologies around. They've put their technology into, it's effectively a consortia down in France across 35 countries who are doing this new fusion facility that they hope to actually be able to do. So this is turning into a fantastic, you know, sort of like just nuclear growth driver. And the other ones, obviously, are things like blast-proof drawers for HS2, other critical, you know, high-performance parts. And that's regardless of the medical, you know, the small four MRI, which could be £5 a share, you know, so on its own. Yeah. So on that basis, again, this one is, you know, it's run the winners. It's delivered 20% per annum for the last 10 years in share price performance. But I can't see it stopping.
No, I really can't. Well, you know, when you get, you know, government policy like that, which is, of course, long term, you know, it's a massive tailwind that's going to be around for a long time. And when you have, sort of like, a best-in-class, like you say, a company like this supplying this, you know, kind of kit, this technology, then they're going to be beneficiaries of this for a long time, aren't they? You know, the end markets are expanding, and so that's a good thing. It's one of the things I always look for, is does it have expanding end markets, and they're going to be around for a long time? You know, look at mega trends, and say, now with nuclear, and the update is energy strategy from the government, of course it's going to be expanding for a long time, you know, so there's plenty of cash there.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, the other thing is, it's a rough rule. I mean, we've talked some good ones here, the pig and the python is the one. one. But another one is, if you want to sort of like go for stock picking, particularly your investment club, okay, just download the portfolio of Christopher Mills, okay, because and have a look through it and see what you like. Because we've talked about, obviously, you know, who was the first one? God, I can't remember. Northbridge, yeah.
Northbridge, yes.
And he's the biggest shareholder of Avingtraz as well, okay? So I've just talked about that, right, yeah. And the other one, we've got really good pricing power, okay, which came out with terrific prelims about 2 weeks ago, is Source Bio. And you know, I've talked about this with the exec chairman, is Jay LeCue, who actually ran Celsius for Christopher in a previous life. Which is a company he took private, but anyway, Source Bio, as you know, they recently bought this cellular pathology business, LD Path, for £18.5 million, and that's absolutely flying. And these and Source Bio's existing, you know, cellular pathology business is absolutely flying as well. So that's sort of like, you know, your healthcare diagnostics business. They have really good pricing power, and what you're seeing there in cellular pathology is the NHS is obviously got this enormous, you know, waiting list of elective procedures, and just needs help. And it, and cellular pathology was already growing at 10 in the NHS spend. It was growing in 10%, but that percent per annum. They spent about $2.5 billion on it a year, and because they haven't got enough capacity, it's obviously a whole acceleration to outsourcers to leading edge with digital platform telemedicine, which is what they do, LD Path and also Source Bio. And they've been seeing, I mean, their growth is very strong, double digits. I mean, you know, before the pandemic, it was growing at 40% per annum. And I would not be surprised that if it does that type of number consistently over the next 5 years, admittedly from a relatively small base, but hey, it's going to really absolutely fly. So I would say that's...
Well, do you know what? You've got to give it to the management, like I said, how they reacted to COVID and how they pivoted and, you know, into testing and all that, because they've killed it. They've absolutely killed it. I mean, Novacyt was one of the best, you know, performers, I think, 2020 with PCR testing. And Source Bio went under the radar a bit, but I've looked at the results, went through them, and... like I said, they went from, you know, 50 million in revenue to 92 million, you know, for 2021. They've got like this 80% growth, cash of like 33 million. It's like, wow.
So now
they've got, I mean, you know, people are sort of a bit concerned maybe the other sectors of business won't grow as fast as that. But they've got cash, time, and look at what the management done. You've got to give faith to the management at how they've really pivoted into COVID, you know, testing. And now they're going back to the core businesses. So, you know, the faith that you have to have faith in the management, really do, because they were very clever and very sharp to capitalize on that area of the market, you know. So, that's testament to them, isn't it? You know,
oh, yeah, no, it is. And as I say, Christopher Mills owns a big chunk of this company, but also, you know, Jay LeCue, etc., eats his own cooking. I mean, he owned about 3% before, and he bought 100,000 shares after the results at £1.30, or just south of £1.30. I mean, that just says everything. And it, again, I keep saying, you know, it's one that I might well put if there's liquidity, I'll put a big chunk of money into it, because I think it's a tremendous. But I mean, Northbridge, Avingtraz, you know, Source Bio. All I would say is that I'm extremely confident that all three of those are going to be a lot higher in 5 years' time. So if you're looking good, steady, solid, well-run businesses, that all of them could get taken out at some point in time by private equity or a trade buyer, you know, this they're one of them. And the other divisions in Source Bio, I mean, obviously the cellular pathology is absolutely flying. But also genomics. The genomic sequencing business is also doing really, really well. And you've got the stability storage as well, which is a good sort of like, you know, sort of cash generating machine. And they've left, and even after the acquisition, they have, I can't remember how much it is, but 15 million pound of cash, which is, you know, another 20p per share. So it's well underpinned. And, you know, I believe in the story and I think it's going to do well. So that'll be, and when we come back to pricing power, these guys have got it, because, you know, they have that, they have the science, they have the margins, and, you know, they have quite a big barriers to entry. So, yeah, you can't really go much wrong with that.
No, exactly. I mean, like I said, The only issue is, at the moment, with any stock, I mean, some of these stocks are not flying when they should be because of the market, the compression of the market. You know, people are just worried, aren't they, about inflation and where it's going in the next few months. Will the war in Ukraine blow up even further? So it's just, I mean, it's hugely frustrating because I've seen companies release good news and go nowhere. You know, sometimes they even go down. It's a liquidity event for people just getting cash. That's the worry at the moment. Some people just go into cash all the time. So it doesn't matter what a company releases. They go, oh, I'm going to cash, people say, you know. So it's really annoying, I know. But like I said, if you have that time horizon of 5 years, you know, 3 to 5 years, should be fine. In fact, I watched an interview with Cathie Wood from ARC last night.
Oh, crikey.
And I wasn't convinced on many of her arguments, but she was saying 5 years. I think, yeah, 5 years to get you out of the hole, maybe. But because, you know, some of her arguments are just ridiculous, really. And I thought, I understand where you're going with it, but you're talking about, you know, huge innovation, all this, but... You know, the share price rose massively, didn't it, off the back of liquidity, and it's come back, and now it's, 40-odd% down. But, yeah, it's amazing. Even when you sit that level, you know, I'm sitting at home as a private investor thinking, you're not even convincing me, really, love. You know? And so how do you convince lots of big money to invest in you? I don't understand. So there we are.
It's easy when your share price is going up. But, I mean, another one where, I mean, even if you're quite a big company, you know, and I think when it comes to sort of, you know, the market, you know, you've just got to face it. You're going to get volatility. And a big battleground stock that you and I have talked about a lot is Avactor. And they came out with some pretty excellent news this morning, okay? Now, what's always forgotten about Avactor is actually, let's just go back pre-pandemic levels. It had two excellent sort of technology platforms, the Precision platform, which is the targeted chemotherapy platform with phase one trials currently going through the AVA 6000 with their novel sort of like lead compound. Yeah, and that's and they should have hopefully some very good sort of like safety and clinical data over the next sort of like, you know, rest of the year, etc. And that's sort of like taken people's attention. But investors have also forgotten that they've got an equally an excellent other platform, the AFMA platform, yeah, which basically does sort of like it's antibody replacements or some of these like they're antibodies. They're not antibodies, but they're essentially things that they do the same thing as antibodies. And this is a huge market, you know, sort of, you know, tens of billions of pounds, etc. Anyway, they came out with news this morning that one of the, you know, their licensing partners, they've held this joint venture with Dai Wong out in Domo Pharmaceuticals out in South Korea, yeah? And it's to develop patented and new and novel stem cell therapies or treatments, etc. And they supply the AFMAs for it. And in preclinical sort of testing, their AFMAs have hit their first prime endpoint, which means that essentially it's now triggered a payment to Avactor in the form of shares. So it's bumped up its joint venture holding to 22%. And this could be huge. I mean, just to give you an indication, as you know, I suffer from Crohn's, yeah? And I've been through all the sort of therapeutic pathways from the NHS. And I tried all of them, and some of them worked, but not very well, and certainly not for very long. Even the lead one, Humira by AbbVie, you know, I had to give up, unfortunately, after 6 months, because then it just stopped. So I'm one of the 50% of, you know, Crohn's patients who effectively just go out and sort yourself out. You know, you've got no choice, yeah? This could actually work. This type of thing could work for me, because the way it would work would be, I'd have I'd be genomically sequenced. Hey, that's a tick in the box for somebody like, you know, Source Bio, etc., to see where my genes were faulty. Then they'd basically take out, you know, stem cells or one of my relatives or whatever like that with similar sort of stem cells, harvest those, inject sort of like, you know, the AFMAs into the stem cells to for the personalized medicine to fit me, etc., for my own harvested stem cells, and then infuse that new concoction back into my body to stop my immune system attacking the rest of my body with joint pains and all kinds of stuff. So I'm exactly the kind of patient. And let's be clear about it. This is a massive, massive potential market. I mean, just for the addressable market for you know, what they're saying from that joint venture is $16 billion in about 2025. So these things, yes, it's early days. We haven't gone into clinical trials. So, you can't sort of like, count your chickens yet, to say the least. But they've just got multiple shots on goal. And again, it's been a battleground stock to Vacta, but they've just got so many big opportunities. Forget about the chemo stuff, which is fabulous, okay? And they could come out with some, could be a multi, I mean, that's a $50 billion a year chemotherapy market. Yeah. I mean, they've got other multiple billions elsewhere in autoimmune, in regenerative medicine, stem cells, viruses, COVID, all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah. No, I can see why. I mean, it's a huge potential there. But at the moment, it does trade on that. And at one point, it was like over 600 million market cap and maybe got ahead of itself because people see the tech is there, definitely there to achieve that. By the way, I'm looking at your equals. Crystal Amber Fund has gone, is it Crystal Amber Fund? It's gone down to 10.18 on equals, by the way. Just got a notification.
Great, excellent. Somebody took a big chunk. I know. I could tell at the end of last week on Friday that a line of about three, a block of about 3 million shares were traded at 82p. So Amber must have been the seller. I'd be interested to see who the 2%, the extra 2% buyer is.
It's you, isn't it?
I'm fully loaded already. Yeah. I mean, equals is my biggest position.
Yeah. Well, no, do you know what? Just going there. I mean, Avacta, let's be honest. I mean, it's one of the things that has the technology and people recognize that and bought into it. And in a bull market, those can go nuts. Stocks based on hope, hype, potential that have good tech and have the potential, big end markets, they can fly. But then you get a hard market and it can take a big knock because it's not based on fundamentals, it's based on the potential, So, yeah, I love hope, hype, potential stocks, but you've got to be in them early because there's a lot of volatility. When that turns and the market turns, they get hit the hardest, but then you've got to have a strong stomach. If you believe the tech...
Let's be clear about it. You only need one thing to come through and it just absolutely rubber stamps, endorses that platform. And that just leads to a whole sort of like avalanche of new treatments. When you've got platform stocks, and these have got, and Avacta's got two platforms, Precision Platform and the Affimer Platform. You only need one thing to work to demonstrate the tech works and is flexible enough and clinically robust, etc. Then you can become a total money machine because you just start churning out lots and lots of different products. And that's what they could, that they'll do. And once you hit that, then we come back to that original question, pricing power. Healthcare and medicine is the best place. If you can get there for pricing power, because you have no problem with margins at 90%. Software is another good area as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're selling air.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm just saying from a private investor's point of view, be careful when you see stocks that have, like great tech or best-in-class stuff, and they've had a massive rise. Just be careful because, like I said, in a hard market, those stocks tend to get hit the most, So you've got to...
That's sentiment, it's not fundamental, mate.
I know, but if you're a private investor, generally private investors can't handle, if you're new, especially the market. And if stocks like those tend to create a lot of noise, positive noise, from followers and stuff. So if you're not knowing about it, you're not used to the markets, and you're not used to volatility, it's hard. It's hard emotionally and mentally for you. So just be careful. Don't go all in. Like I said, always. Diversity there is a good thing. It helps you a lot. Cool.
What about your... I know you spoke to Vic Kist, CEO of...
I like
Sciata,
Vic a lot. Yeah, I like...
Oh, yeah. What about that for a company?
He said to me, he went on video, I said, oh, hi, Vic, this is, we're just doing a podcast. It's nice to see you, by the way. I said, are you at the new factory? He said, yes. Oh, he said, I was going to show you around. I said, well, you show me around, but obviously... He said, in fact... and then he said afterwards, oh, Paul wants to come up and see the place. So he's an extended invite through... me to you, but he wants you to do a video up there at factory, but they're already up and running there. And
in Sunderland, isn't it? They're basically taking over ZF's old
full production lines they got up there.
Yeah, for £1 million or £1.1 million. I mean, it's an absolute steal, isn't it? I mean, I know they've got great tech in sort of like all things, sort of axial flux electric motors. And they've got a huge runway with two or three wheelers and different types of like outboard motors and all this sort of stuff. But actually, so the organic growth is massive. But actually, his deal making is just as good, if not better, because he bought that e-traction business out from Evergrande for about an absolute song, and he's come out with a new factory. And okay, what did he say to you in terms of?
Do you know what he reminds me of a little bit? And maybe I don't know if he's played this, but he literally is, you know, full steam ahead, you know? He wants to run. Let's get it going. Let's go. He reminds me of Elon Musk a bit. And I think, he's in that sort of area. And I thought, I don't know whether he's, but he literally, wants to get things going as fast as he can. And I said to him, wow, I didn't realize he's going to be in the factory right now. He said, oh, yeah, I'd like to be further advanced in this if we can, but, you know, there's certain things you have to do. But no, I'm really very, and I just looked at it. And again, it's one of those stocks I liked straight away when they came to the market. I didn't take a position at all, and it rose very quickly. I thought, in fact, now, looking at the valuation, it's got a bit, of course, they're still early stage, but the markets are massive. But then you look at the growth forecast by the broker, you think, bloody, that's amazing. I can't remember what they were, but they are literally,
off the charts, aren't they?
Yeah, off the chart growth forecast. And if they achieve that, then of course it'll grow into that that valuation very quickly and beyond.
Beyond.
So it could be a very big company, I think. Very impressed with Vic. I like him. I like the company. But I just want to see some more updates. At the moment, it's annoying not having any spare cash, because that's one of the companies I probably would have taken a little position in and scale in over time, because there's always volatility, like you say. People shouldn't worry too much about buying at the wrong price. If you really like a company and it's got massive end markets, the technology is very good, the management's very good, then there's always opportunities, always ups and downs in share prices and the market. When you've got no cash and you're fully invested, it's annoying. When you've got plenty of cash, that's opportunity. It's full of, simple as that. It's different sides of the same coin, isn't it? But, I like Scyther. I think it could be very big, definitely. I like it a lot.
Well, just to put some numbers on that one. Them striking that deal with a new facility out in Sunderland accelerates their commercialisation strategy by 2 years. And they had a budget of £10 million to have a new facility, which they were going to, a greenfield site. And actually, as I say, it's cost them £1 million, plus they're going to have to do a bit more work on it and hire people, etc. But so it's significantly less than budget. It's on time, and it's going to give them exactly what they want, because, from day one, they'll be able to transfer that volume from out in China, which came with the e-axial, the e-traction brand, the sort of the heavy commercial vehicle drivetrains. They're obviously going to produce 100. They're trying to produce 100,000 electric motors for Europe, which is largely to service like their, say, Marine brand, their Propel brand, and then also importantly to showcase the technology to joint venture and license partners around the world. So it hits all the right buttons, and they've just done it overnight. And he's just done, that team has just done a fabulous job. And again, to put a bit, put a bit of flesh on the bone, I sort of like, if they won a 5% market share of their total addressable market, then essentially on a 15 times EBITDA multiple, that would hit at around about £7 to £11 per share. So yes, when they listed at £1.20 and they're £1.80, yes, you could say it's 50% increase, and you might think, oh, that's a bit pricey. Well, let's be clear about it. The fundamentals for this business could drive this share over the next 5 years to multiples of that. This really could be your 10 bagger, mate.
I was looking at, out of interest, because I liked it. I went to look at the brokers there, what they had penned in, and I thought, just looking at the top line there, and thinking, okay, for 2021, actual was 900,000 top line. I thought, okay. And then 2022 goes up to 3.9 million. I thought, okay, it's a good increase, but still, it's off a low base, and their market cap is 140. And then it goes up to 21 million forecast for 2023. Then 61 million for 2024, and that's profitable then as well. They're saying it's going to be profitable. So, wow, that is takeoff speed. And I imagine that's when it starts going. It starts getting interesting then, So, if they achieve that, it's phenomenal. I think with Vic behind it, he is his own sort of EV motor. He's self-propelled. It's unbelievable. He's got a lot of drive behind him,
Yeah, well, I think that's sort of like a theme, isn't it? Of all sort of like many small caps and stuff like that. And another one, I touch base with Manolay, which is basically the UK's number one insolvency litigation funder. And I've talked about we've talked about these guys before. And what happened, basically, it's a bit like the elective procedures with Source Bio, et cetera, building up that backlog of patient procedures which need to be done, waiting list, et cetera. But this is actually in the insolvency sector. So what's happened during the pandemic, if you turn the clock back 2 years, we had interest rates at roughly around about 1% or so like that. And, they were doing really, really well, 10 million of EBIT, et cetera. Then we had the pandemic and the government put on huge amounts of artificial creditor protection measures that essentially saved a lot of zombie companies that would have gone bust anyway. And then worse still, has meant that, now a lot of companies have taken these bounce back loans. And it may well be that we've got things like director malfeasance and all kinds of stuff that needs to be sorted out, which is really their bread and butter stuff. To take on to fund these particular cases over the last 2 years. So you've had this huge suppression, and now you're getting the uptick with that backlog of insolvency cases coming through. And it would have happened 3 to 4 months earlier, but we had, because of Omicron, the variant, what that meant is that a lot of the insolvency practitioners couldn't get back into their offices and do the work. And also they'd laid a number of people off, et cetera. So they didn't have the workforce to process it then to say, yes, we want to pass these back through to Manolais. And so they had, compared to what they were hoping, a relatively, they had a flat Q4 on Q3 and Q2, whereas they're hoping to see an uptick in Q4 and they didn't see it. So they came out with basically, you could actually say, I suppose, it was a profit, downgrade, which it was, but essentially
on delays.
Yeah, exactly. It hasn't cancelled any of their work. It just basically deferred it into the new year. And what they've seen the last 4 to 5 weeks, albeit small, time sample, is that that's seen a big tick up in activity. And, I think he says in the statement that the company's in good shape going into this new year. So, the shares are around about, £2.20, £2.30, et cetera. Yeah, and even on the profit warning, the shares went down.
I saw that. In fact,
they went down the first 5 minutes and then started to go up again because people realised, actually, this is a huge buying opportunity. Yeah. And,
When you research, I think your note on it helped. I think I saw people say, could read that because, like I said, it was delays. And in fact, the interesting level they dipped down to, that dip there, 195, which you go back, that was pretty much the dip at early 2021. And that's a good support level. It's going to bounce off that nicely, but it's back up there. But again, that's business, isn't it? Business doesn't run smoothly. You've got a good business sometimes. You can't help these macro headwinds, things of government policy. But as long as it's not a cancellation, it's not a change in the business, the investment case hasn't broken, and you think, okay, it's just a delay, it's fine. You've got to have that patience as an investor, haven't you? If you're running your own business, nothing ever goes smoothly from the morning you open to the evening you shut. Things, you have issues at that, but as long as you're still, progressing, it's fine,
Yeah, and importantly, what's in their control, they've managed to, solve a shed load of cases during the pandemic as well. And the amount of cash they've churned out has just been fabulous. So it was a record level of cash generation over the period. And they finalised or settled a large case in effectively this month, and they're going to get fully paid for that over the next 25 days. So by roughly mid-May, they'll be down to 6.5 million of net debt. And that compares to, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what, but I would be much surprised if they do 10, 12 million of EBITDA this year. So, that's absolutely so comfortable. And my valuation for this stock, if you put a 13 to 15 times EBIT multiple on it in 3 years' time, is £3.80 to £5. So again, if you want a good quality stock driven by a huge tailwind of elective procedures, it isn't elective procedures, it's just the courts have got to get through and we've got to resolve obviously all of these, insolvency cases over the next few years, then, basically Manolais is a good solid business that isn't going, it's just only going to grow. And the other big secular, tailwind behind it, which a lot of people forget about and don't fully appreciate, is that actually this whole industry was started only in about, I think it was 2014, 15, when the government actually allowed third parties to buy insolvency cases off insolvency practitioners to help largely get through the backlog and also protect the insolvency practitioners. So it's a unique situation that's gone from a standing start to, you know, still is a relatively fledgling business, in a massive business that most of the cases are still taken by insolvency practitioners and funded by insolvency practitioners. But essentially, they haven't got the balance sheet to be able to do that, and they're relatively risk averse. So Mano Lay's got the expertise to be able to resolve these. I mean, just give you an example. I mean, I did actually speak to Stephen Cooklin, and there's a video, so have a look at that, guys. But there was one which went through the court cases last week. You probably saw Boris Becker. And that's a typical example. You know, he basically got done four counts of you know, sort of like fraud, essentially, for basically not disclosing his assets to an insolvency practitioner, hiding his assets, I think they called it, or something like that. But it was four counts anyway. And he's the classic kind of person they'd go after if they were given the case, simply because he's got money to be able to pay off his creditors. He's held it, and they'd reach a settlement and get the case sorted and done and dusted. Wouldn't have to go through the courts. The creditor would be happy. Mano Lay would get paid, and Boris Becker would be happy because he hasn't got to go to jail. So all three parties would be a winner on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But
in fact, Steve said most of the time, you know, when it comes to you send them a letter and it's sorted. You know, just they send them a formal letter headed and
It usually takes 12 months to actually sort it, and then to get payment over about another 12 months. So that's how the life cycle of the cash. But again, another theme is sort of like entrepreneurial management. I mean, Steve set that up in Mano Lay, and then another one. And again, Marks Electrical. I don't know if you saw that. I mean, they sell online, you know, sort of fridge, freezers, cookers, all the, you know, the sort of large domestic appliances into houses, but premium quality, etc., all your top level brands and stuff like that. Started by an absolute entrepreneur, you know, sort of Mark Smithson, and I interviewed him, and they came out with frankly breathtaking Q4 results, backing up a really strong Q3 in really quite a difficult market, because you just got to look at AO. You know, AO World has been struggling of late. They haven't hit their trading statement just the last 3 months, but I bet you if they hit flat, they'll be doing well. And Marks Electrical saw sales go up by, I think it was 19% to 20.7 million turnover and good strong
margins.
That's
3 months. You know? That's 3 months ended 31st March. But yeah. 12 months ended 44% up. Yeah.
With good sort of like, you know, EBITDA margins of sort of 9%. And again, I would come down to, you know, this whole retail sector is bifurcating between, you know, sort of like the winners and the losers. And Marks, you know, got to give the guys credit, yeah? In quite a difficult market where a lot of the competitors are stumbling, etc. This is a best-in-class company producing best-in-class results. And it's got this sort of internal target, yeah? To go from around about just over 1% market share to roughly 10% over the next 5 years. So from sort of like, you know, or, you know, sort of 50 to 100 million of turnover, I think it should do about 80 or so this year, yeah, to about 500 million plus. And if it does that, then, you know, when you run the numbers and you look at the sort of valuation, I mean, I get a valuation of £3.80 to £5.70 versus the shares are roughly less than a pound at the moment. So again, you know, it's run by a absolute entrepreneur and backed up by, you know, excellent CFO as well. So the great sort of like...
But you know, I spoke to Chris Wickham about them actually. He said,
Didn't you? That's right. Yeah,
he said he went up to meet Marks, and he said, "You've got to go there to understand the ethos there." He said, "Mark there, he knows everything about everything. I mean, even if a van comes in, you know, he knows if the tyres need changing.
He knows everything about it.
And when you say it's a competitive environment, but the businesses who win are businesses like that. You know, they're not just managers brought in for national brands who don't really know much about the business, but they're good at numbers or they're good at, you know, people managing. It's businesses like that, where, like I said, put their customers first, next day delivery free, pretty much anywhere in the UK, and they stand by that. You know, their name is above the door, pretty much. Those are the kind of businesses who win because it's their name, it's their reputation. And like I said, they live for the business. So, it's very interesting that.
Well, it was funny when I first spoke to him, sort of like, it wasn't on a video or anything like that. And he asked me where do I live. And I said, well, I live in Birmingham. He says, oh, right. Yeah, I was round that neck of the woods recently putting leaflets promotional leaflets through doors. Is the kind of, you know, demonstration of leadership, driving at the front, you know, basically getting involved in all kinds of the detail.
How many CEOs of a listed company would you go bring leaflets to doors?
Exactly.
And you can tell how much he wanted to survive, you know, to thrive and all that stuff, I know.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got a great team because, you know, his CFO is fabulous as well. So, and another one where, you know, you've got an entrepreneurial guy. So, I mean, I did mention that I was trying to touch base and eventually did, is Shankar Patel, CEO and founder of Lords Group Trading. And the reason why I'd had difficulty picking it up because this guy is always on the road. Yeah. He's basically, he's looking, he goes and visits his depots, he goes and visits, you know, suppliers, and he goes and looked on M&A. And last week, he did basically a couple of acquisitions, a couple of weeks ago, a couple of bolt-on acquisitions, one in sort of their heating and plumbing division, another one into their specialist building merchanting business as well. It's about 50-50 in terms of profit split between the sort of two divisions, etc. And that's what they're, you know, that this guy is just such a leader. And I interviewed him as a sort of, and again, I'd, you know, have investors have a look at it because it just comes through perfectly, the entrepreneurial talent, but the love, the actual love of the business, the enthusiasm of the business that sets the right culture, empowers people around the company to take, you know, responsibility and then an accountability and to really drive, you know, sort of like the business forward. And all nearly all of the employees, if not all of them, are shareholders, both of Marks Electrical and of, you know, Lords Group Trading. And that's brilliant because you get that participation, you get that ownership culture. And as I say, the two deals, et cetera, that they did was perfect. They were good value. One of them in the building materials extended their geographical footprint into the east of England. And the other one, basically in the heating and plumbing, allows the expansion of their really popular sort of like Mr. Central Heating online brand, which basically does, you know, all things for sort of like, you know, plumbing and heating, et cetera. So, you know, they really are moving in the right direction. And, you know, 80% of this business is repair, maintenance and improvement, et cetera. So it's very stable. And again, and when we come, you know, we mentioned right at the start, you know, areas with pricing power. You wouldn't have thought building products have good pricing power. Well, they do, I'm sorry. Simply because, you know, because they've managed to push prices on. It's simply because it still is a really tight market. You try and get yourself a builder or a plumber or anybody like that, and it's frankly flipping difficult. And and also the parts overall are generally quite small. You know, they don't cost that much compared to the labour associated with putting it into a particular house and doing your change. And consumers and, you know, the residential are still, you know, I mean, they want, you know, they're still in that nesting type. They still want to improve their houses for so that working at home or just more comfortable. And what you're also seeing now, which came actually through from other, you know, people, is that you're seeing a stronger commercial sector. So, for instance, Victoria Flooring, who does, you know, sort of all things sort of carpeting and all that kind of stuff, they're saying that they're starting to see a lot of commercial building also now getting improved because they haven't been, you know, there's a big backlog of that. So this is going to be a secular trend. And got the same messages from Travis Perkins not long ago, from Wix DIY. And obviously, you know, the other one is Michelmersh Brick as well. And these companies have got very good, strong pricing power going forward into strong secular growth markets, driven things, you know, basically very poor quality housing stock that needs to be upgraded over years and years and years. And the government's promise to build, you know, 300,000 houses per annum, when in reality they're only doing 200,000 at the moment. These things, if you back an entrepreneurial team that and a workforce that is fully engaged and fully committed, plus that's got an industry with pricing power, you know, if you can find opportunities where you know the baby's been thrown out with the bathwater, and I'd say Lords and Lords Group Trading is definitely one, you know, sort of Marks Electricals another, and Michelmersh Brick, then, you know, you can't go much wrong with pretty much businesses that have been around through recessions before and will continue to do well going forward because they've grown faster than the market because of that ownership and that entrepreneurial and that ability to succeed and desire to succeed. That is absolutely that passion to be first and best in class.
No, do you know what? Like I said, it was a while back, I read that book about 100 baggers, and they basically looked at the companies that 100 bagged, you know, in America, American stocks, and they said there's not many traits you can put across them all, because they're all great businesses, you know. But one of the things that keeps popping up are founders or family businesses that stayed with the business for a long time because they have the passion and they want to continue to improve it. They're not about bonuses or upgrades or, you know, looking for the next job. They're there for their lifetime improving the business, you know. And, yeah, so that's a running theme. If you can find one. I'm not saying all 100 baggers have that, but a lot of them did. There's one trait they picked up on. Quite a few of them had that, you know. So people like Marx and Lords like that, yeah, that's the kind of business you look for because they have passion for it, you know, absolute passion for it. The thrive and survive.
I'll just throw out a couple of examples for you. What, you know, to illustrate that, what of Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and Larry Ellison all got in common?
Yeah, exactly. They're all lucky.
Zuckerberg. I mean, you may not like him, but the guy is still in Facebook, isn't he? Meta, I think they call it. So,
It's worth looking at that. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, another one which came out with a good trading update that I've been banging the table, you know, is on my portfolio is FD Technologies, large cap.
Yeah, how much did you buy that? Because as soon as after you started buying into that, I saw the share price shoot up. I thought, Paul is really lumping into that.
I did tell you, Mac, I like it. I mean, basically, they're jewel in the crown. They've got a couple of really good. They've got one steady business that is growing. Well, I shouldn't say steady. It's growing at double-digit top line. It's that first derivatives business, which is the IT outsourcing consultancy that basically implements their technologies into that 19 of the top 21, you know, big merchant banks and hedge funds around the world. That's doing, obviously, that generates all the crash and is doing really well. But the really two real flyers and stars, one is this sales and marketing sort of business that does all things sort of like big data in the marketing area for large companies. And then likewise, with the software that effectively is used to do that and is also used in the first derivatives business is this KX Insights business. And that and the big sort of like game changer, you know, from that over the last 2 weeks has been, one, they've done an exit run rate now of 25% ARR growth, which is just great because they've just moved straight now almost like perfectly onto all SaaS because they were being artificially hit by that migration from perpetual licenses. And they hit a big contract, outsourcing contract with, Microsoft as well. So their real jewel in that crown, which I think is a brilliant bit of their business, KX Insights, is just absolutely flying. So, I'm delighted, you know.
Is it Octopus, I think, up there holding it, isn't they, a little bit so as well? So there's a buyer there, Octopus Investment, so, one of the funders.
But, it's been a busy last couple of weeks. And I think this what's been really good, and I think you've highlighted them perfectly, you know, in our discussion is, you know, you draw out those sort of key characteristics and, you know, you just got to look at it. Pricing power, IP, a good shirt like yours, mate. No, yeah. Entrepreneurial management. Yeah. You got managers basically getting skin in the game, you know, eating their own cooking, etc. And also, you know, if Chris Mills is on the register, don't discount it because the guy's got an uncanny knack of being right, even though you may not think they're really sort of like sexy 10-bagger type companies. If you can deliver 15% per annum, you know, gross return every single year, you'll double your portfolio every 5 years. Now you've only got to live a few, you know, if you do it. You live for 30 years, et cetera, and you're doubling every 5 years. What's that, 16 times? I mean, you might as well give up your job and just carry on buying shirts like you.
Yeah, exactly.
How's your portfolio doing?
It's going sideways. I mean, we had a bounce. I think we've hit the bottom in the microcaps, hopefully, fingers crossed. But like I said, it's grinded lower. And in fact, it was, like I said, this time last year, it started to roll over a little bit. And it's only the last couple of months now, it's started to bounce a little bit. So it's bounced and now going sideways, I think, waiting for some more. I mean, you know, I think one of the biggest holders I've got is XP Factory. They came out with hopefully some kind of trading update ahead of the results soon. But I mean, I've been looking around at other leisure companies, and most leisure companies are flying. They're literally, people just want to get back out and spend and do things. I mean, I'm not sure how, you know, to be honest, I don't think, I mean, there's a lot of talk about inflation, all that stuff. I understand that. But generally, people still treat themselves, you know, once a month,
yeah,
twice a month. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to XP Factory's update, because I think if it fits in line with, and I had a chat with actually Richard, the CEO, a while back, and he, you know, obviously can't say anything. But he said, no, listen, I'm more than happy with how we're trading. It's a, I mean, it's unbelievable. So I'm pleased with it. So I'm just looking forward to the results, because I followed all sort of leisure companies. The results have been double-digit plus, you know, really done really well. So,
well, also the holiday companies, the overseas holiday companies, and the flight, you know, the EasyJets and the Jet2s, they're all saying the same thing. If you've got money, people want to spend it, and they're not booking one holiday or two holidays this year abroad.
Yeah.
They're booking two, three, four, five. I mean, they're just going absolutely mad. You can't even get a seat on a lot of these flights.
My wife is trying to book holiday crazy. Calm down. I said, listen. Inflation. Things are costing us more. Slow it down there, okay? And she said, why are we being careful? I said, because of inflation. I said, I save money on a monthly basis, she says. I said, you spend that on holidays. I don't know. I can't really get the point. But she has a point. I said, what are we saving for? Well, we'll save a little bit. I don't know what for. But, and that's the behavioural thought. All this fear, macro fear, it does play into your mind a little bit, doesn't it? And even, you know, I said, you know, I'm not skint, but even I'm saying, be careful. And so that, if everyone's doing that, that in itself will solve inflation, because people tend to be a bit more careful, less spending goes on. But I'm hoping the microcap space has, you know, had its hard time. It's like 12 months of hard time, pretty much. But so maybe it'll go sideways or bounce.
You're right. I mean, you and I have sort of peas out the pot here, actually, Justin, because I'll give you a classic point. Okay, I've got my Tesco's online delivery coming in this afternoon, you know, for Easter. And because I've been so busy, and also my health hasn't been great, my wife and the kids have gone on holiday just down the south of England. They're coming back on Friday. So I thought, I'll treat them, yeah? So, you know, there was a deal going on, Three Tober Road, sort of like 20% off on a large Tober Road. So I bought one each, you know, for Easter. And that just shows you, you know, as in such that you still want it, because of inflation, you want a deal, you know. And so you get a deal. And they love Tober Road. So
it's like that. I mean, my wife, she went to Centre Parks with her mother and their cousins and my two kids. And I stayed home for the weekend. And she said, oh, listen, the weather's going to be nice for the bank holiday weekend. Let's book camping. No, listen, calm it down. We've got a garden here, and we can spend a lot less money in the garden, and the sun's still the same. You know, so I know. But it's just that, it tells you,
yeah, you're right.
You watch the news, and you start to worry about things, you know. So there we are.
We'll end on a positive note, yeah? If it's Ukraine, Russia ceasefire, that will actually help a lot of animal spirits. And also, if we do see a big release of sort of like, you know, crude oil and stuff like that by some, you know, the Saudis or anybody like this, then that again will take the heat off, you know, global inflation, etc. So, you know, there's a lot of catalysts that could potentially go well for the stock market. And if that happens, then interest rate expectations, rather than 3% for the Fed, are coming down. And on that basis, then that you're going to get multiple expansion, not compression, which is where the market is at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that day, isn't it? May the 9th, I think, was where the Russian had this Heroes Day about Nazi Germany, and they remember the fallen war criminals. Mm. And that's Putin's. He's going to carry on till then, whatever happens. So, because he wants some kind of victory to show that massive parade they have once a year. So some people are saying that's maybe an end point or cease there. But also just on the oil thing, you know, I know OPEC have always tried to limit the supply of oil to keep the price up. The price is up. You know, and every oil producer I've talked to, or people in that area, they're pumping like crazy. These are the kind of prices you wait for and you pump for. So I wouldn't be surprised if people like OPEC would up their supply, because you're not going to get much more profit than, what, $100 a barrel.
Yeah. And also, I know it hasn't been talked about much, etc., but there's only two semi-friends of Russia left in the world. Okay, we'll take out Syria and Iran and people like that, yeah? But major, major economic powers. That's China and India, yeah? Those guys are really suffering on inflation, really suffering, yeah? Particularly India is. You just think about the amount of economic pressure that these guys are putting on Russia to sort this damn thing out, because it's causing them politically a shed real, real problems. And if they want their, if Russia and Putin wants their continued support, or at least not to blacklist them, then he's going to have to give something. So I would not be surprised if they also put quite a bit of pressure behind the scenes on the Kremlin to solve this out.
Money talks in the end, is it? When people are complaining in big economies like that and suffering, they'll start to lose patience. And marvellous. Cheers, that.
All right, mate. Have a great Easter, everyone. Eat your Toblerone.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.